Princess Noor from East Ghouta. Here, there's no water, no food, no life.
That's Noor. She's 10 years old and lives in Eastern Ghouta in Syria. And in the video posted on Twitter last week, she describes what life is like for her. Her neighborhood in Eastern Ghouta has been under siege by the Syrian government forces for the past month. More than 1,600 civilians are now dead. Thousands of others are wounded. But late last week, it all stopped. A ceasefire was reached. Thousands of civilians and rebel fighters were allowed to leave Ghouta to go to the province of Idlib in the northwest. Here are two civilians on their way speaking to Al Jazeera on Monday.
They burned everything, even the bunkers we were hiding in. If we left the bunkers, we would get killed by airstrikes. I can't describe the situation we were in. It was awful.
We left our homes behind, although everything has been destroyed. We left our history, our memories. We left all that behind because we couldn't tolerate the circumstances.
For more on the latest in Eastern Ghouta, we go to Karim Shaheen. He's Middle Eastern reporter for The Guardian. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So remind us where Eastern Ghouta is and what has been happening over there.
Right. So Eastern Ghouta is a suburb of the Syrian capital, Damascus. It's this vast agricultural area that used to be the breadbasket of the capital. In 2012, it fell to forces that were opposed to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and were trying to overthrow him. And over the last month and a half or so, it has been under a very tight siege, continuous, relentless bombardment by the Syrian government and by its Russian allies in an effort to take it, because it's an extremely strategically important area, given its proximity to the capital.
We heard that video where that young girl talks about how difficult life is. Can you give us a sense of the destruction? We know that there's been bombings. What's it like now, that sense of destruction?
Yeah, I mean, some of the doctors that we've been speaking to on a regular basis inside Ghouta have been talking about, you know, unprecedented levels of destruction. The phrase, they burned the whole place down, is one that you hear quite frequently. In the space of a little bit over a month, we have 1,500 people who've been killed. We have thousands more wounded as a result of the airstrikes, the shelling, various types of weaponry, incendiary weapons. And people have spent much of the last month actually living in bomb shelters in their basements. Families packed like sardines in these shelters. There was obviously enormous amounts of hunger because the siege has been so tight for so many months. And prior to the last wave of attacks, there had been several cases of malnutrition among children in the area, children who had died because their mothers were no longer able to breastfeed them because their mothers themselves were, under malnutrition. And so it's been a devastating situation all around for much of the last few months, and particularly intense under the airstrikes over the last month.
So why now was there a ceasefire agreed to? What was the trigger for this?
The attacks have been so intense that there was also some pressure on the rebels to negotiate some sort of settlement. The regime advances backed by Russian airstrikes have been quite rapid. Essentially, their strategy was to isolate the various towns of Eastern Ghouta into three pockets that are disconnected from the other parts of the region. And so they succeeded in doing that quite quickly after they began the offensive. And so you had these three patches of ground under an even more tightened siege and under quite an intense bombardment, both from the air and from artillery. And so eventually the rebels there realized that it wasn't sustainable. There were demands from the civilians that they need to get out. And as the regime was advancing, there are occasions when, you see thousands of civilians simply fleeing those areas, that had been under intense bombardment for, the last few hours, and fleeing towards the regime forces that had been bombarding them out of desperation. And so there has been mounting pressure for some sort of deal whereby, people who want to be evacuated can be evacuated or potentially stay and reconcile with the government under Russian guarantees.
There is one rebel holdout in Eastern Ghouta in Syria. It's the city of Duma. That's where one resident posted a video over the weekend of what looked like bright snowfall in the night. It looks incredibly beautiful, but it's actually a sign of destruction. That effect was caused by phosphorus bombs being launched by the Assad government.
The bombing of Bashar Assad forces Duma city, Eastern Ghouta. My God.
So, Karim, focusing on Duma, how many people live there? What's the situation like for them?
Yeah, it's really difficult to get accurate numbers because several thousand people have left the area through a humanitarian crossing that had been set up near Douma. The estimates from locals, which might be a bit exaggerated, is between 200 and 250,000, possibly as low as 150,000. But it is the most populated city in eastern Ghouta, and used to be, before the war, was one of the top 10 largest cities in all of Syria. In terms of the conditions of civilians in there, it's very much similar to the rest of the region. It had been under bombardment, but the difference with Douma is that occasionally there have been humanitarian convoys that have been allowed in to the city, led by the UN and the Red Cross and the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, although the warehouses where they've stored some of the goods have been bombed in the course of the campaign as well.
So what's the symbolic importance of Douma in this war?
Douma is an extremely important area because it was one of the largest cities to fall out of government control very early on in the conflict. It's a center of activism. Many people there are opposed to President Bashar al-Assad and his government, and have been for a very long time. Obviously, Douma also was one of the areas that suffered from the chemical attacks in 2013. And, it's simply been an opposition stronghold for much of the conflict. And it's also extremely heavily populated. And the question now is, all those people who are still there and those people who took part actively in the opposition campaign against Bashar al-Assad and in the war against him and the civil uprising against him as well, what their fates are going to be now that negotiations are ongoing and the city is completely surrounded.
So is there any chance, Karim, that rebels can actually hold on to the city, or is it just a matter of time before Assad and Russia have full control?
I think it's a matter of time. I mean, right now there are a lot of negotiations that are going on between the main rebel group there, which is called Jaish al-Islam, and the Russian government representatives. So the question that they're dealing with is really a question of forced displacement. The other areas of Ghouta reached an agreement with the Russians predicated on the idea that all the fighters are going to be exiled, that all the civilians who want to leave are going to be exiled. But you're talking about, over 150,000 civilians in Douma, a lot of whom have taken part in the uprising actively and so would not trust Russian guarantees or regime guarantees that they will not be prosecuted or arrested or, drafted into the army. And so it's going to be a monumental catastrophe if the fighting goes on, because 150,000 civilians who are faced with the choice of either dying in the fighting or being forcibly exiled somewhere else in Syria at such a large scale is something that's quite difficult to conceive of, even from a logistical point of view, let alone from a humanitarian point of view. And right now, there's a ceasefire while those negotiations go on. The rebel groups are adamantly opposed to the idea of being exiled out of the region. And so there's a possibility that the fighting that we've seen, which has been extremely brutal over the last month and a half, is going to resume again and is going to be a lot worse for civilians there, because they're essentially the only holdout at this point.
It's so chilling when you say it could be a lot worse. If you could tell us in a phrase as we're ending this interview, what's next in the Syrian war?
I think, further humanitarian catastrophes, unless a political solution is found, unless everyone is brought to the table and forced somehow to talk by all their international sponsors.
Thank you so much, Karim Shaheen, Middle East reporter for The Guardian.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.